This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
This morning we're going to continue in our series, The Beginning of the Good News, as we really dig into the first chapter of Mark. And so far, John the Baptist has prepared the way. Jesus is baptized. He then goes out into the wilderness. He calls his first disciples, and now he's ready to really kind of launch his ministry in Galilee. And so in our passage today, we have this confrontation, this power encounter that really helps us understand the authority of Jesus. That's really going to be our focus this morning, the authority of Jesus. And so let's consider this. Jesus' mending authority, his exposing authority, his silencing authority, and his raising authority. So mending, exposing, silencing, and raising. So first, let's deal with Jesus' mending authority. You know, he and his disciples are still in Capernaum. And on the Sabbath, they go to the synagogue where Jesus teaches. And there's no comment about the content of what he's teaching, but he gained rave reviews. And not because of his eloquence, although I'm sure he was quite eloquent, but because of his authority. That's what got their attention, his authority. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority. And so while this is happening, an evil spirit manifests and Jesus performs an exorcism, if you will. The man is set free. So it's another demonstration of authority. They say, what is this? A new teaching? And with authority, he even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him. So authority. Jesus has authority. The Greek word here is exousia, and it means power, rule, dominion. So Jesus' teaching, like I said, I'm sure was eloquent, but what got their attention was it came with power. You see this in the exorcism. There's no hocus pocus or incantations or magic wand, just a word, boom. He speaks it, it's done. Come out of, be quiet, come out of him. And it's over. You know, in the Greek translation of the Old Testament. So, in Jesus' day, most Jews did not speak Hebrew or Aramaic. They spoke Greek. Many of them did. So they had the Old Testament translated into Greek. And the Old Testament has this word in it, exousia. And one of the places where it is most prominently used, not incoincidentally, is Daniel chapter 7. So the prophet Daniel chapter 7, he has this vision. And listen to how he describes his vision. In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshiped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. So what this story in Mark is telling us is that this kingdom, this anticipated kingdom, has arrived in the person of Jesus. Exousia, real authority, has arrived. Not only in Jesus' teaching, but in the miraculous things that he's doing. You know, casting out demons, healing the sick. You know, in C.S. Lewis's famous book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there's a place where it describes what happens when Aslan, the Christ figure, is on the move. Narnia is described as a place where it's always winter but never Christmas. So it's always cold and everything's frozen and you don't get the good part of winter, which is Christmas. It's just always the bad stuff. However, when Aslan is on the move, what happens? The snow begins to melt and spring emerges. The grass turns green, the flowers begin to grow. And so this new authoritative teaching, it's a sign. It's a sign, like spring emerging, that the king has come. And because of his mending authority, in his kingdom, the brokenness of the world is healed. It's Humpty Dumpty is put back together again. Good triumphs over evil. The sick are healed. And this is why Jesus says it's good news that the kingdom has come near. And just as Jesus proclaimed and manifested this good news, if we fast forward in Mark's Gospel, chapter 6, we see that he commissions his disciples to go out and do exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. It says, calling the 12 to him, he began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over impure spirits. They went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and anointed many sick people with oil and healed them. So as a community of disciples, that same mission has been passed on to us. And that means we are a people who have been given Jesus' mending authority so that we can bring that to bear in people's lives, in the lives of broken, hurting people. So Jesus' authority is a mending, a healing authority. The second thing is Jesus' authority is an exposing authority. Just then, a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out. So the man is already present in the crowd, but the evil spirit is silent, is not manifesting itself. But we know that the spirit knows who Jesus is, and he's afraid. It's as if he's waiting, the spirit is waiting to see what Jesus is going to do. And after a while, it's like he can't take the suspense any longer. And so he just blurts out through the man, you know, what do you want? Have you come here to destroy us? And so the evil spirit at that point then is exposed for all to see. And Jesus just immediately deals with it. You know, evil has no place in God's kingdom. And so for Jesus' authority to have a mending and a healing impact, that means evil has to be exposed for what it is. You know, the light of God's goodness needs to shine in the dark places. Paul writes, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. It is shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light. This is why it is said, wake up, sleeper, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Now, so this exposing work is actually also part of the work we are given to do. We need to shine the light of God into the dark places where people are being oppressed. You know, Jesus says directly to his disciples in the Sermon on the Mount, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. You know, I'm really thankful for ministries like Compassion International, International Justice Mission, just to name two, because they expose evil realities that are associated with developing world poverty, especially as it's related to kids. Last year, I was asked to watch some promotional materials from IJM, International Justice Mission. And they told stories of kids that they had rescued out of forced labor, out of the sex trade. And I couldn't get through it. I had to stop it. I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't deal with this. And I thought at first, why do they make it so jarring? And I thought, then that's exactly what they're looking for. It's exactly what they want. They want to expose this evil for what it is. And they want us to be confronted with it. Because see, we want to live in our you know, nice, wealthy, suburban bubble and just pretend that these things don't happen. But they do. And in some cases, ways that we live actually are connected to it. So we need to expose evil for what it is. It makes us uncomfortable, but we need to have it exposed so it can be rooted out and healed by God's love. So Jesus' authority is also an exposing authority. The third thing is Jesus' authority is a silencing authority. Notice what the Spirit says before Jesus casts him out. What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. And Jesus immediately replies with, be quiet. He wants the evil spirit to shut up. It's like, shut up, you know? Because look at what happens after this encounter. It says, news about him spread quickly over the whole region. And so now there's large crowds of people following him everywhere he goes. It says they brought everyone in the town. They brought all the sick people. Everyone who was, they brought them to Jesus. Can you imagine that? Like, you know, just this throng of people, and they're all there. They all need something. They all want something from you. You know, and Jesus, of course, wants to heal. He wants to make well and make whole. But all this attention is not really what he wants at this point. And that's why we have this bizarre line in verse 34. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak. So unlike that first one, it's like, all right, no more speaking. He wouldn't let them speak because they knew who he was. So why not? What's going on? Well, Jesus doesn't want the attention. He didn't want people, at this point at least, to be wondering, is this the Messiah? Is this the Holy One of God? He didn't want this because he knew that that would provoke the religious leaders and they would come down on him. And Jesus knew it was not time for that yet. He knew that time would come, but it was not that time yet. And so be quiet, said Jesus sternly. Come out of him. The impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. Now let's fast forward to Mark chapter 15 as Jesus hangs on the cross. Mark says, with a loud cry, a shriek, it's the same Greek word, Jesus breathed his last. And in Greek, the word for breath is the same exact word as the word for spirit. They are used interchangeably, which is why some translations have this, Jesus gave up his spirit, or literally translated, his spirit was expelled. You see, Jesus understood that to ultimately triumph over evil and silence the demons, that he would have to be silenced. He knew that the way to his true authority was to give it up. To still the spirits, he would have to give up his own. But for him, it wasn't an involuntarily, you know, the spirit wasn't involuntarily driven out. For him, his spirit was voluntarily given up. You know, this casting out of the evil spirit, it was simply a border skirmish in preparation for the really greater battle that Jesus would fight. And this was a battle not just to heal a few people or cast out a few demons, but to destroy the power of sin and death by giving himself as a sacrifice for the sins of the world. So Jesus became lifeless. He became spiritless that he might breathe his spirit into you and me and make us whole. I want to read, this is N.T. Wright, Bishop N.T. Wright, his commentary on Mark. And he says this, "There is no doubt that Jesus quickly attracted huge crowds and that his authoritative healings were the main reason. That in itself would have been threatening to the authorities. But as we shall discover soon, there was more. Jesus had joined in a struggle against the forces of evil and destruction, forces that, like the dark, cruel sea, pouring in on top of frightened and helpless travelers, seemed sometimes to be carrying all before them. Jesus came to be the human bridge across which people could climb to safety. And if in the process, he himself paid with his own life the price of this saving authority, a human bridge with outstretched arms carrying people from death to life, that was simply part of the integrity of his action. The demons had their final shriek at him as he hung on the cross, challenging and mocking for the last time the validity of his authority. On the cross, he completed the healing work he began that day in the synagogue." So let's go on to our last point, the fourth kind of manifestation of Jesus' authority. His authority is a raising authority. So after they leave the synagogue, they go to Peter's house, and his mother-in-law is in bed with a fever. It says, "So Jesus went to her, took her hand, and helped her up. The fever left her, and she began to wait on them." So it's important for us, first of all, to remember, in this context, a fever, an infection, is a really big deal. Like, you don't just go to the doctor and get your antibiotics and everything is fine. No, this is how a lot of people die. So it's a big deal that she's sick, she's in bed, she has a fever. But Jesus heals her, and then he helps her up. In the literal translation is he raised her up. He raised her up. 19 times, I looked it up, 19 times Mark uses this word about raising. And oftentimes he uses it in the context of healings. The paralytic, the man with the withered hand, Jairus' daughter, the possessed boy, the blind beggar, all of them, it says Jesus raised them up. It's also obviously the same exact word that's used for Jesus' resurrection. So Jesus' authority, Mark's letting us know, his authority resurrects. Peter's mother-in-law is resurrected. And so in the same way that Mark is giving us this linguistic cue that points us to Jesus' death when the spirit is expelled from the man, in the same way he's giving us here a linguistic cue that points us to Jesus' resurrection. No longer sick and debilitated, she's raised up, she's made whole. She's no longer confined to the bed, but she's set free to do what brings her joy, what brings blessing to others. And notice Mark tells us that once well, she began to wait on them. Now, before we react with modern snobbery, how dare she be subjected to the stereotypical woman's role? I know of somebody, at least one person had to be thinking that. I had several people looking at me with evil eyes at 8:30. Let me just tell you, she was absolutely overjoyed to be able to serve Jesus. Overjoyed. I mean, what a privilege to be able to bless him after he had just so amazingly blessed her. You know, when you understand the gospel, when you come to acknowledge the authority of Jesus, he raises you up. He sets you free. He sets you free to be the absolutely best you that you can be. He raises you up to a new life, a life of devotion, a life of hospitality, a life of generosity, a life of building community and blessing others. You know, when you acknowledge the authority of Jesus, he raises you up to the fullness of life for which you were created. I want to end with Charles Wesley. He's a great American hymn writer, Anglican hymn writer. And he wrote one of his most famous hymns right after his conversion in 1738. And the fourth verse of "And Can It Be," it really beautifully describes this raising authority of Jesus in his life. He says, "Long my imprisoned spirit lay, fast bound in sin and nature's night. Thine eye diffused a quickening ray. I woke, the dungeon flamed with light. My chains fell off, my heart was free. I rose, went forth, and followed thee." All right, Amanda's going to lead us in our prayer time.